You know, I'll bet a lot of people are becoming more and more acquainted with this world merely because of the newspaper strike. I don't want to say this, but I talked to a famous New York newspaper man who said to me, and he's a famous columnist, might interest you to know, and I said to him, you know, being innocent, I said, famous columnist, you must feel as though your world has disappeared since the newspapers are on strike and you no longer have an outlet. Well, you know, I just make him talk. And he looked at me and he says, why, no. I said, well, don't you miss writing all that stuff? He says, no, as a matter of fact, I have discovered the real world since the newspaper strike. And I said, you have discovered the real world? He said, yes, I will never be able to write again the way I wrote before the newspaper strike. Now, once again, I have observed the real world, and I know that it ain't the way... No, Walt, there. Oh, that was a close, eh? Rick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink. I'm the sheik of Araby. Oh, your love belongs to me. At night, when you're asleep, sleep, into your tent, I'll creep. Oh, the stars that shine above will light our way to love. You'll rule this land with me. I'm the sheik of Araby. Well, I'm singing now. That's a special kind of singing. If you'll set that back, Walt, I'll once again do the band remote type singing. Now, you just forget it. No, you don't have to set it back. You just let it go because it goes over and over again. There is a special kind of singer. Well, not really a singer. A special kind of singer that I used to always be doing band remotes with. And I would say, and now here he comes, that wonderful band, that band of renown. It's Johnny Davis and his 17 men of rhythm. Well, the stars that shine above will light our way to love. By the way, that's a very special technique, is to get too close to the microphone and drown the band out, because you figure that they better hear you, or else if somebody's in the audience that is a famous recording official, you'll never get a recording contract. And, of course, you are killed invariably by not only the fact you have no voice at all, but by the fact that the amplifying system has a 17% percentage degree and 14% overload factor involving feedbacks. Your love belongs to me. Okay. Just thought you ought to know that I'm not stopping for anybody. You know, while we're on the subject of Walt, don't look like that, for crying out loud. That's all right. Oh, you pipe smokers are nervous people. No, what I'd like to point out here, though, since it is getting late in everybody's life, there are many ways you can go, and I might as well tell you right offhand that I'm in rehearsal for a play. And when you're in rehearsal for a play, a very peculiar thing happens to you, and if there are any actors out there who... might understand this problem, or it's not a problem at all, it's a phenomenon. When you are in rehearsal for a play, and you have begun... Hey, Walt, now listen, I'm not going to throw you any curves, you can just listen now. When you are in rehearsal for a play, a very strange thing happens. Do any of you know anything about that, Walt? Have you ever been in rehearsal for a play? Really? Have you? Well, I mean a really, really tough son of a gun. Well, what happens to you is that it's as though... all of your pores are open. It's very strange. As though every pore, in mental pore, of course, has opened up, and you hear things on buses, you hear things being said in subways, you hear things on elevators that ordinarily you are not even attuned to. In other words, you come out of yourself and you begin to contact everything around you to an almost abnormal degree. Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. You'd be surprised how with a thick coating of cheesecloth most of us have around ourselves all the time that insulates the world from us. Now, this cheesecloth prevents us from hearing people talk. You don't know it's there. You just are not tuned to anything. It prevents you from seeing things. You just aren't seeing anything. You're just kind of looking inside. You're hearing inside. You're feeling inside. You make very little contact. Well, the first couple of days of rehearsal of a play, that cheesecloth is still there. You can't hear anybody. A guy will stand right next to you, and he'll say to you something like, what manner of steed be this? And everybody stands around. They're waiting for you to say your line. And he says, what manner of steed be this? Oh, yes. This is a big white one. This steed beeth the largest steed that we can find in all of Putnam County. And then there's a long pause. You see, he's flubbed the dub, too. Now, he's off somewhere in left field. His eyeballs are circling over 2nd Avenue. Long silence. And you say, oh, it's the biggest steed that we can find in Putnam County. What sayest thou? You say, What sayest thou? I say it's the biggest steed we can find in Putnam County. And so we must... And it goes on and on. You see, and all the while this cheesecloth has come. Speaking of cheesecloth, this is WOR, AM and FME. And we'll be here until those guys with the scores come on again. There's eternally guys with scores on the station these days. Where are all these crummy games being played? Huh? No scores tonight? Well, I don't know what you're saying. I have no idea. I don't know what. No mass production tonight? No horse racing? What's that got to do with the games? I'm just saying that there are games. Games are coming into the windows here. I don't know what it is. And who is? I mean, who follows all these games? And Seton Hall, what? And it goes on. Well, I guess the children have to play. While we're on the subject of the children, we have here a probably the most peculiar commercial you are going to hear this year. Now, it hasn't started yet, so don't start the clock. It hasn't started. It does not start until we mention the name of the product. Okay? That's the way the law reads. But this is a very strange commercial, and before I do it, I would like to say that it is only for people who are in a specific series of businesses, like schools, hospitals, ad agencies. And this is a very, very expensive product. However, even if you're a cheapie, you can sneak in and see it. Okay, now the name of this product is Telebeam. And this is directed specifically at the business. It is a new device which transmits a television signal from a set, from off the air, you know, and puts it on a huge screen, exactly like a movie. A tremendous screen all the way up to, 200 square inches. Big thing. 200 square feet, rather. 200 square. It looks like, just like a movie. And it has beautiful definition. You can run a microscope through it for hospitals, for doctors, for classroom work. You can also run other things, slides and so on through it. this is a very peculiar subject. Do you know you can get hooked on electric shocks? Are you familiar with this phenomenon? Very few people are. Well, let me tell you, I don't know whether I should tell you this. After all, it's Tuesday night, nervous people out there. Well, I'll tell you. This is related to the great medicine cabinet mystery, which we talked about last Friday night, if you recall. Well, when I was a kid, I might as well start right at the beginning, there is a great belief, you know, among almost everybody in the world today, particularly here in the United States. I'd also say it holds good in Germany. It holds good in England. It holds good throughout most of the Western world. We have a belief in science almost as strong as people earlier believed in other forms of religion. In other words, science itself has become a thing you fear. It's become a thing you worship. It's become a thing that guides your life. It's become a thing that governs your life. That is enough for most people. That makes it very official. and it could be just plain ordinary baking soda that they put in there. And certainly it is a scientific formula, yes. Any formula can be called a scientific formula. H2O is a scientific formula, if you want to look at it that way. Yes, the new scientific formula, H2O, the new secret ingredient, aqua. And believe me, a lot of people would think that this is a new scientific ingredient that's been added, like water. Well, so this is not a new thing. As a matter of fact, during the 19th century, when science first began to be an operative thing in the homes of people. In other words, science at one time was a thing that was just a plaything, more or less. Physics, for example, was really a physics teacher. Do you know that within just the last few years, a physics major has become literally a practical scientist? Well, years ago, a physics major was kind of like a philosophy major. He was, it was very, very, very impractical, and he sat around with little pith balls hanging on strings, you know, and he had little things with magnetism, and he fooled around with magnetic fields. No, I'm serious. That it was not considered a serious study. It was considered a study of purely theoretical use. That's really all it was. It was like logic, something like that. And in fact, as recent as just before World War II, a physicist, a man with a doctorate in physics, was a lonely man on the campus. And in fact, many campuses didn't even have them. And there were only a couple of thousand doctors of physics in the world, and they used to gather in little forlorn conventions. They'd have a little convention somewhere, and they'd sit around. It would be like a convention of crossword puzzle experts. And they'd talk about their things, and they had little money, and they had nothing to do, nothing to go by. But the name science had a certain mysterious ring to it. And even in the 19th century, charlatans everywhere began to use this. They began to make a big thing of it. And they began to sell the idea to people that science could change their whole life. Science itself. Well, one time, it was the only time I ever really ran into the 19th century scientific curatives. The only time. I've heard a lot about them, but I wish I had this thing now because it would be a very valuable thing to own. But one time, I'm a kid, see, and we were up in Michigan. Now, there was a very interesting thing up in Michigan. I don't know whether any of you have ever been up in the great Midwestern states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. I mean, way up in the upper ends of these states. Well, these states, at one time, when I was a kid, seemed to have nothing but deserted farmhouses dotting the landscape. These were farms that had been just deserted. You know, people would just leave them. They were all going to the city, apparently. This was during the days... Apparently, all I can say is apparently, during the days of the great migration to the cities. Well, the way people did it was interesting. They couldn't sell their farm. Nobody wanted their farm. Usually these were poor farms. They were rocky. They were having trouble to even keep themselves in food. So nobody wanted them. So one day they decided to go into Detroit and make big money in the Ford factory. And they would just pack up and go. Leave their house, their furniture, the whole bit. Just walk out. Now, do you follow what I'm saying? Walk out. These are true deserted homes. These were not just empty houses. So they were all around out there in the wilderness. And that was one of the big things we used to do when, as a kid, we would go up into Michigan and flub around the lakes. We would walk around these farmhouses. Just go in and there would be rocking chairs. There would be pictures hanging on the wall with a guy with a beard, you know? There would be a thing that said, God bless our little home. And there would be pots and pans. We'd walk around, we'd hit each other on the head with lampshades and flub around. Well, one time, we are going through this deserted farmhouse. Me and a kid named Warren Selke. I've never mentioned Warren Selke. Well, Warren Selke was my vacation friend. Warren Selke, the only time I saw Warren Selke, he came from the other side of town. I never saw him. Was when we would go on a vacation because Warren Selke's family went to the same lake we did. So I would see Warren Selke during the summer. Me and Warren Selke and my kid brother are flubbing around in this old farmhouse up in Michigan. We're way up by Bay City, Michigan, which is way up north. And the wind is blowing. There's beautiful lakes all over the place and deer. And there's hardly anybody around. We're going through this farmhouse. And it had, I remember one thing interesting about it. It had an old deserted apple orchard Have you ever seen a deserted apple orchard with the grass grown, oh, maybe waist high all around the trees, and all the apples that have fallen down over the years are just sort of soaking down into the ground? Yeah, and the ground is fermented, really, literally. The ground just bubbles, and it is thick and rich. And about every two or three days, the deer would come around there and literally eat the ground and get the fantastic bag on. Oh, yeah, the deer would be staggering around. You've never seen... You know, you like to think of fawns and does being such sweet little creatures. You ought to see a drunken doe yelling and hollering and swearing in the bushes, saying awful things. And then once in a while, a fawn would come along reeling. Oh, gee, talk about juvenile delinquents. Well, anyway, we're fooling around in this place. And we are going through the attic. And up in the attic, they had all kinds of trunks and things with... It's wild. Now, all of this stuff, I'm sure, is now on sale over here on 3rd Avenue in the 50s. Like for $150 for the rocking chair, you know, that kind of stuff. But in those days, yeah, just chop it up, you know, crummy old chair. Oh, throw it down, yell, holler, chandelier, we're swinging. Well, we're going through a trunk, and I came across a box. Let me describe it to you. It looked like a tiny electric sewing machine. You know the kind with the round top, the wooden top that's round, that kind? And it's as though you took this, you know what, it looks like it's made out of walnut or something. And this was about, I'd say a foot and a half long, about 7 or 8 inches wide, maybe a little wider. And it was about, I'd say about 8 inches high and had a brass handle on the top. And it had brass clips on the side, very, very officially bound, all dovetailed, you know, very heavy. And I picked this thing up, and I say, what's this, Selkie? And Selkie looks. She says, it looks like a little sewing machine. So, up come the two things. I lift it up, and there it is. Now, it was divided into two compartments inside. One compartment had nothing but a bunch of wires, just big green wires, and on the end of the green wires were two brass handles. They looked like handles to a jumping rope. And on the other end of the wires, you had big brass plugs. Also in this compartment was a crank, like a phonograph crank. And then inside the cover, it said, instructions, very important for medical instructions for the operation of the electromagnetic therapeutic mental therapeutic machine. Made by the electromental therapeutic machine of Rochester, New York. All patents pending in the Western world. And then it had under that, it had a whole list of ailments this thing would cure. Sciatica, diarrhea, bad knees, water on the brain, bad feet, the pip, cirrhosis, the coughies, the sneezes, the wobblies, cancer, tuberculosis, or the dreaded white fever, and all other diseases known to horse, man, and fish. Absolutely guaranteed, money-backed, a scientific invention. Well, we looked at this thing, and of course, being kids, we figured we had hit the super final Ennsville magnificent jackpot. The ultimate jackpot. So, the further instructions went on. It said, insert crank in slot A. And there was a slot, A. So I take out the brass crank, and then it went on to say, insert handle mark D into slot mark D. Insert handle C into slot mark C. See further instructions for various treatments. Note instruction book. And then there was a big hand pointing at instruction book, which was tacked to the inside of the cover. So we're standing around. So, being a kid, I take out the handle. In it goes in the slot. I take out the first green cord with the in it goes in the slot. Take out the second one. In it goes in the slot. And I give the two handles to my kid brother. I say, hang on to these. I will read the instructions. It said, patient will take handle D in left hand, handle C in right hand. He will then stand perfectly still. If the patient is suffering from a minor malady, such as weevils, winkles, and coughies, 3 moderately spaced turns, after counting 1, 2, 3 each, will suffice for the first treatment. The treatment must be repeated no less than twice a day for 1 week before improvement will be noted. For more serious ailments, such as cancer, the dreaded white fever, the black plague, 17 handle twists at counting beats of 1, 2, 3 will suffice for the first treatment, and then tapering off day by day until finally a full cure is effected. Absolutely guaranteed. Follow the instructions to the letter. Well, we stood. My kid brother's got a hold of the handles. And so I start turning the crank. This thing probably had not been cranked since the day of Garfield's assassination. He drops the handles like they were full of red-hot lead. His eyeballs are popping out. He said, I got a shock. What? I got a shock. He said, come on, give me the handles. You turn the crank. Well, I grabbed a hold of the 2 handles, and my kid brother grabs a hold of the thing. Well, I'll tell you how it felt. It was a very strange kind of a shock. It was like a shock that builds up. It would go like that. And then as the thing, it had a flywheel in it, and then it was a rising shock. Let us say, Ed, it was a sine wave shock. And then, well, of course, Selke had it doing. Well, before the afternoon was out, we were putting each other on, see who could hold on to it the longest, for the most twists. And so, a kid would grab a hold of it, he would brace himself, clench his teeth, and then he'd start cranking. And you'd let go of it. You draw these long arcs about a foot and a half each. Well, we figured, actually, what we were doing was a healthful thing. We figured we were clearing up everything. Skin trouble, the pip, all of it, you know. The itch, the hives, the whole bit. Let me tell you, over the course, we took this thing back to the summer cottage. And we began to play around with this thing. Well, over the course of about 2 weeks, we developed the most unbelievable immunity to electric shocks that you could, you just couldn't believe it. We could hold on to that thing, and the kid, whoever was on the crank, could crank that thing as hard as he wanted. And you're so... And he just keeps cranking, and pretty soon he's all sweated up. Well, that's when it really hurt. It really got you when the thing was slowing up. I don't know quite why that is. What is it, Ed? Eddy currents or something? Eddy currents, I figure that's what it is, eddy currents. I suspect that there's a little hysteresis in there, too, if you know what I mean. Hysteresis, you want me to describe the process of hysteresis to you? You know, the lining up of the molecules, and then you crank it too fast, the molecules get all balled up, and they get all... Oh, yes, hysteresis losses are terrible. Well, in a kid of age 9, the hysteresis losses are much higher than iron filings at the age 42. And so... And as soon as they let go of the crank... Boy, old sweat would be popping out of your old eyeballs, and the kid on the crank would be sweating. Well, then you'd change sides. He'd grab a hold of the 2 handles, and you'd start cranking. Well, I guess I don't have to tell you how we graduated from that machine. The next thing we started to do was to plug in plugs into the wall, and we'd hang on to the empty wires. We actually got hooked on getting shocks. So we would hang on, you know, we'd hang on. We started it out, you know, as a gag, first of all, with the plug, with the lamp. And you'd feel the shock, but the shock was nothing compared to the machine. Well, my mother, of course, was tuned out of this thing completely. This is a purely a kid thing. Our experiments had been conducted completely by ourselves. We had nothing to do with, you know, grown-up people. And my mother knew we had the machine. She kept always saying, "Would you quit fooling with the machine when you're supposed to be eating?" That's about as far as she knew it was. This was a machine that we were fooling with. She always had an idea it was should have played records or something. But it was just a machine. Well, my kid brother one day goes into the kitchen with our plug and our wire. And he says, "Hey, Ma, watch." And he plugs this thing in, and he grabs a hold of the two ends. And she says, "Look out, you're going to kill yourself." And he's holding up. And then he puts on his act. He's going, "Ah, ah, oh, oh, oh." And she rushes over and unplugs the thing, and he falls flat on the floor. "Ah, oh, oh, oh." Well, he didn't even feel it. He didn't feel it any more than you get it from a flashlight battery. And he's laying there. And my mother says, "Now, what's the matter with you? Are you going out of your head? Are you a nut?" And she grabs him, and she's shaking him. "What's the matter with you? And you go in and lay down." So I'm in the dining room, you know. And I see the scene, you know. The whole scene is set up. So Randy goes staggering out. He's going. By the way, he had two great acts that he could do, in case you're interested as a kid. He had two great acts. One was his staggering heebie-jeebies. Whenever his big thing he would do at a party was to stagger around like he had just been struck by lightning or something. He could do this great. And now, can you guys wait out there? You got 5 minutes. Now, fellas, I mean it, Warren. Now, the other guy, no, I mean it. The other thing that he used to do, he could bulge his stomach out. He could bulge his stomach out like a bowling ball. He could pop it out, and he was a skinny kid. He could pop his stomach out like he had swallowed a basketball. It was wild. Just like that, it would stick way out. And on the top, he was skinny. And no, I mean it. I mean it, fellas. I'm not serious, you. Yes, I'm serious. I am. So he could pop his stomach out like a bowling ball. Well, one day, a lady came to visit us, and she was sitting there, and Randy was wearing his T-shirt. And he walks into the living room and pops his stomach right out, like, well, it was like he was about in his seventh month. He, pow, just pops it out like there, like he's carrying a basketball in there. He, poof, like that. And this lady, who was a nice, very, very quiet, and a very nervous Hungarian lady who hardly spoke it. She, "Oh, Randy, what is the matter with Randy's stomach?" And Randall says, "Oh, nothing. I've just been eating too much soup." And he goes, "Unk, unk, unk, unk." And she says, oh, you mustn't do unk, unk, unk. And it would go, gong, 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 unk, unk, unk. And he goes walking out of the room. Well, her eyeballs are sticking out like ping pong balls. Well, so he had this great heebie-jeebie act that he would do. So he goes staggering out of the kitchen after he has taken his shock, and my mother's got her arms around his shoulder. "Now, what is the matter with you? When are you kids ever going to grow up? Now, will you quit fooling around with the electricity?" He's doing his heebie-jeebie. Well, with that, I go into the kitchen, and my mother comes out of the bedroom, and I've got the plug. And I go, "Clunk, watch, Ma." Down I go. And she says, "What is the matter with you kids? You're going to be the death of me." And she reaches down and she belts me right across the eye. Pow! Oh, oh, oh. Well, I go into my heebie-jeebie act. So I go staggering into the bedroom next to the kid brother, and we're both laying there. Well, she goes out into the next room. And about 20 minutes later, the old man comes home. And we're popping our guts in there, you know. And she says, the first thing she hears, you know, she says, we hear coming out of the kitchen, "Will you go in and talk to those kids? I never saw anything like it. They were playing with, it's bad enough matches. They were playing with the electricity. They came right in here and they plugged the plug in here. No, right like this." And she plugs the plug in, and somehow she had gotten the things crossed. Plop! No fuse. And the old man says, "What are you doing? You blew a fuse. You can't plug a plug in there." She said, "Watch what the kids are doing." Well, he came in, and his eye, I'm telling you, there was blood in his eye. And he says, "What are you kids doing today?" He grabs my kid brother by the belt and belts him across the fanny. grabs me, pelts me across the fanny. And of course, all in the meantime, we're just laying there hollering and screaming, time and tide, and all of it goes past. Oh, by the way, it did cure my hives. Haven't had hives since. Cured my whoopies, cured my coffees, cured the weasels, cured the black plague. I have not had the black plague since I was 7 years old. You can't beat science.